Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 52. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, the weirdest thing happened to me as we were walking in here tonight.
What's that?
I was walking in, getting ready to do the podcast, minding my own business, and Sidney Crosby wouldn't shake my hand.
He was just standing right there.
And he wouldn't shake my hand. Granted, I didn't wait long enough.
Right. I just skated off the ice.
Come on. Whatever.
I like how that's the
And then he made fun of Sarah Palin's daughter.
Yeah. That's
right. Jeez. Dude, what episode number is this? We've been gone for a week.
Yeah, I know. Undisclosed upper and lower body injuries.
Dude, can I tell the listeners what I'm looking at?
I guess, if you must.
Mike has pink eye.
Pink eye, as
which
they
is
say
usually
on South
Park. Something reserved for a 6-year-old girl.
Dude, that's not true.
So I'm sitting here wearing sunglasses behind plexiglass, hoping that I don't get the dreaded podcast pink eye.
Dude, am I still doing the podcast?
You are, dude. Dude, you are.
You're am I here. Manning up?
You're here. Because, you know, being away for more than 2 weeks is inexcusable. Well, so what number is this? Well,
52. You know, Patrick Sharp speared me in the balls, and I'm also doing it for that, too.
No, Craig Rave.
Craig Rave, 52. The Thank only 52 you. In Sharks history. Nice, dude.
That was easy.
That was an easy one. So this week, we have an interview with Scott Cullen, who wrote an important article on TSN recently cool. about the Sharks. So we'll be talking to him later on in the show. But
TSN
first,
is like Canada's ESPN.
Right.
But
it's like they're like the smarter ESPN because hockey leads all their coverage.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's definitely on my bookmarks.
Yes, absolutely.
Fabulous. If you have not discovered TSN for hockey coverage, you should definitely discover it. And Scott Cullen always writes these off-season previews mm-hmm. of teams and what, you know, he thinks they should do, should not do. And his take on the Sharks is interesting. And we have some interesting questions for him.
Yep. Yep. But first of all, got to talk about the biggest thing in hockey, Stanley Cup. That was not what I expected. I got to tell you.
But what a great series.
Yeah. Great
and
game seven.
It sure seemed like after the 5-0 whooping
yeah.
that happened in game five that I know you're pretty confident the Penguins were going to roll over and get gutted in game six. And
boy, was I wrong.
No, yeah. Certainly, they came back and, you know, there'll always be the question marks that maybe are unfair that, you know, the Red Wings are not operating at full health here.
Well,
but
that's just part of the deal.
Absolutely it is. I mean, Gonchar was playing on one leg, basically.
That's right. And Crosby didn't play the second two periods of game seven, the most important game of the series in Detroit.
Right.
Detroit wasn't able to take advantage of that. So, you know, Pens deserve all the credit because winning in that building is hard enough as it is. Winning game seven in that building is even harder. And that's it. New dynasty. Is that the passing
I think
of
if
the
they
torch?
Could keep this team together, certainly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that the Penguins are going to be a team to be reckoned with, if they can keep Malkin, Crosby, Fleury, and that solid defensive core together. And also, I mean, not to be undervalued, what a great collection of third line players yeah. that they have there. So productive.
Max Talbot, of all people, that scores guy, 2 goals in game seven.
I mean, he certainly was in the discussion for MVP of the finals. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was money for sure. And that's exactly what the Sharks are missing. The supporting cast, not as good as what the Penguins and Red Wings have, and that's why we weren't able to go on.
Not to get too much off on a digression here, but I think they're going to have trouble keeping Letang. That's the one player I don't see them being able to hold on to, and I wonder if that might be a tipping point between them being a dynasty or whatever you want to call it, really successful in the playoffs for years to come and not. If they can keep Letang, then I think they can really go far. But if they can't, they're going to have to fill that hole, much like the Sharks have a hole to fill in D as well.
I'm taking a look here real quick at who they have unrestricted. They don't have a ton of cap room. They're in a similar situation that the Sharks are. They've got about $10 million to work with quite a few important players. You got to figure, priority number one for them is, you know, Rob Scuderi's unrestricted.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep him.
Yeah.
And then you've got Letang coming up the year after that.
Right.
So you got to try and keep those guys.
Year.
And I think they've got to try and keep Bill Guerin. He was very, very important.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dude.
I think that's a deadline trade that you can fill.
No. I mean,
That's Doug Waite. That's Doug Waite to Carolina.
Well, you know, Shatan's gone. Sakura's gone. You know, Fedotenko, you got to think that they're interested in keeping him. He fit in pretty well there.
Although he didn't grow a beard. So I'm against right, Fedotenko at this point.
Very upsetting. But they've got some good prospects still kind of waiting around down in the AHL. So, you know, Pittsburgh, I think, is in a pretty decent position to continue their run.
All right, enough Penguins. This is a Sharks podcast.
Sorry.
There's some Sharks news, big news. Sharks losing one of their assistant coaches, Todd Richards, will be the new head coach of the Minnesota Wild.
Congratulations.
Yes,
to him,
absolutely.
First of all.
Well deserved.
Absolutely. Speaking of former Pittsburgh Penguins, he could have been the coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins sitting in the Stanley Cup Finals right now.
Yeah, instead of Dan Bylsma. That's true.
So when that happened and that went all went down, I felt pretty bad for Todd Richards.
Yeah.
Going, oh, man. You know, and he must have felt, you know, no matter what he wants to say, I mean, come on. You know, that was his job. He was next if something happened. So, you know, for him to get a chance to really remake the Minnesota Wild, which I'm looking forward to because, God, they were the most boring, wretched team to watch.
It's true. It wouldn't be bad. Yeah, I mean, no longer will the Minnesota Wild games be just a snoozer affair that you think about selling your ticket to.
I think it's quite possible that the Minnesota Wild next year will be one of the worst teams in the league because they really were successful because of that system,
mm-hmm.
not because of the players they have on that team. So unless Fletcher's able to do a pretty decent makeover, then Richards' first year might be a long one.
Yeah. Well, Gabrick might be the big question. If they can keep Gabrick, they might be respectable, I think.
I don't think they're going to be able to keep him.
Anyway, so, okay, so little conjecture. Who's going to take Richards' spot then?
I think it's going to be Mike Ricci.
You think so?
Because Richards was in charge of the forwards. Richards was in charge of the power play. So, you know, maybe Mike Ricci will go on the ice and do some hands-on demonstration of how you stand in front of the net and deflect pucks.
Right.
I think Mike Ricci is the logical choice. He was on the bench for some of the games in Worcester. I think Doug Wilson was not oblivious to the fact that Todd Richards was probably going to be on the radar of some other GMs this summer. So Mike Ricci is my choice, dude. What do you think?
I think Tony Granato could be on the list, too.
Dude, yes, good. Absolutely.
It's possible.
I think Granato, if Ricci moves down and the player development position opens up, I think Tony Granato being a part of the Sharks organization next year is highly likely.
All right, dude. One other rumor that's going on. Danny Heatley says he wants out of Ottawa. And
wouldn't you?
Well, and the way they are right now, absolutely. So now they're putting an executive team in place, so now they can all shirk responsibility evenly, so there's not one guy to take the fall. Sounds like a great idea. But Heatley says he wants out. You know, Sharks fans would love to have a guy like that. He scores 40 or 50 goals every single year. People were talking about Marlowe for Heatley. David Pollock wrote about it on the blog, I think today even, saying that that's a lot of baggage. And I think when he said baggage, he meant his contract. He's got a huge deal, a lot of money in a lot of years. Is that, you think that's even possible for this trade to go down?
I think the Sharks would have to give more than just Marlowe because Marlowe, as you know, Cullen's going to allude to in the podcast, that you know, Marlowe comes off the books in a year. And so you're getting a year of a very good player and then Marlowe could just leave.
Right.
Unless he's coming with extension, which I doubt it's the case. It's not like this is a homecoming
for Marlowe.
You
can't even sign an extension until after free agency starts.
So Marlowe would actually, I think, be almost as far away from his hometown in Canada as he would be as he is here.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, I don't see it going down with Marlowe being part of the package, and then I don't see the Sharks needing him. I'm worried about Heatley's, I guess, emotional baggage from...
I was just going to say.
What we've heard, you know, this guy kind of has a knock on him, right, dude?
Yeah, they say he doesn't have a lot of grit. They say he doesn't have a lot of leadership.
We need another guy like that,
right?
That's
what we need, another guy like that, right? I would love to avoid that whole thing again.
So if that's true, then there's a 0.0 chance that the Sharks are interested. Doug Wilson's not going to bring another guy into the locker room that at the end of the year he's going to look him in the eye and feel like he didn't care about winning.
That's the
no
last thing
chance.
We need.
I'm saying right now, Heatley, not a Shark. No chance.
No chance. All right. Well, here comes our interview with Scott Cullen. We propose a bunch of different deals. We talk about a bunch of different players that are out there. So I think you're going to get a good feel for the chances maybe of some other players coming to the Sharks. So check it out.
Dude.
All right. Our next illustrious guest on Dudes on Hockey is Scott Cullen, a writer for TSN, who recently penned a column called Off-Season Game Plan Sharks that we're talking to here today on Dudes on Hockey. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Scott, you know, in the blog here by David Pollock, who's our Sharks beat writer, he mentions that the unrestricted free agent Gustafson, the hot goalie prospect, is in San Jose today, which has everyone a little bit of buzz over here on his four-team tour. I guess he's going to Colorado and Dallas and Toronto. Just kind of curious of getting your take on, you know, do you see the Sharks really as a viable landing spot for Gustafson, and what are the Sharks' selling points over some of the others?
Well, I don't know that they're, I guess, the favorite landing spot, unless you don't think that there's a long-term future there for Nabokov. But I could see a situation where he likes the idea of coming in to learn the North American game, backing up Nabokov, and doing so while playing for a winning team. I mean, there are advantages to that, obviously. And if he's confident that, you know, a year from now the Sharks would be happy with him as their number one rather than Nabokov, well, then, you know, maybe that's the way to go about it. I think there are obviously better opportunities for him to play if he goes to Colorado or Toronto, certainly, because they're teams that are pretty much willing, I think, to hand over the starting job to Gustafson if he is willing to take it from them.
Yeah, it's a good question, because that's a big question for Sharks this offseason, is what exactly is going to happen to Nabokov. Do you have an opinion on that, or you think it's just in the tea leaves and we're going to find out like everybody else?
Yeah, I was thinking about that today, and it really seems like it's a tough decision, because you can't give up altogether on the goalie who just led your team to the President's Trophy and has been, you know, one of the most productive goalies in the league for the last few years. Like, you can't just give up on that and you know, take a flyer on a guy who's never played in the league. But at the same time, it becomes really questionable what the future is if next year's result for the Sharks isn't any better than this year's. And you know, then you're left with Nabokov as an unrestricted free agent. Maybe he's not hanging around. And then, you know, what do you have? I mean, I know there are some goaltenders in the system, but certainly none that you would expect to be ready to be number one goaltenders in a year. I think the Sharks have to cast a lot with Nabokov, and whether that even means getting him signed to an extension this year, I think that's probably the most reasonable play for them to make.
Touching on another team in the division with Dallas and Joe Nieuwendyk maybe looking to make his stamp with Gustafson, do you think Marty Turco's another goalie that might be in play in the trade market?
Oh, sure. Anytime there's a new GM in town, guys become in play, right? Because there's not any loyalty from Joe Nieuwendyk to having Marty Turco there. And it's not, that doesn't mean that he's coming in there just to get rid of guys for the sake of getting rid of them. But, I mean, Turco had a brutal year last year, and which in some respects makes it not an ideal time to trade him. But at the same time, you're also not going to be looking to deal a goaltender when things are going well. You know, if things are going well, you keep them. So I could certainly see the Stars looking to move Turco, but at the same time, I don't know that it's a pressing need for them. You know, they could always justify it by expecting him to bounce back next season. You know, this past year was the single worst year of his career and fairly out of character. So if they're willing to give him a pass, I could understand that. But you know, like I say, the new GM, you never know. There's no real loyalty there.
Hey, Scott, you identified the need for the Sharks to upgrade on the third line with a quote-unquote solid two-way forward. And the examples you gave are Michael Samuelson, Chad LaRose, and Thomas Kopecky. And how much do you think it would cost to get a guy like that, and which do you think might be the best fit for the Sharks?
Well, and the reason I throw out guys like Samuelson and Kopecky are obviously because McClellan would have some familiarity with them. I don't even know how much he would like them. I just know that there would be some familiarity from the Detroit days with them. And a guy like LaRose is one of the guys who I think if a team is looking to upgrade on their third line, he's a guy who's really going to be interesting because he played really well for Carolina this year, and it's taken them some time to sort of round out his game. But, you know, now that he's added a bit of a scoring touch this year, there's a little more upside to him than just your typical checking winger, I think. So, you know, what the cost might be, I think Samuelson and LaRose, I think, maybe in the $1.5 million to kind of range for a season. I don't know that Kopecky would even cost that much. He is unrestricted, but he's sort of been under the radar there in Detroit and hasn't had a chance to put up huge numbers that would justify an outrageous contract. But any of them would come at a fairly reasonable price for what you're getting, I think.
It seems to be reasonably priced is the key term, because the Sharks, every offseason, just really can't seem to land a marquee free agent. Kind of curious to get your take on why do you think that is? I mean, there's players out there that I would think Doug Wilson would be very interested in, like a Mike Komisarek, but he's going to come with a big price tag. Do you think the Sharks are going to be in the running for a guy like that? Or why can't they seem to land someone who costs over $4 million on the market?
Well, I guess that's a question that Doug Wilson could commiserate with the people in Montreal. They run into the same problems, it seems, every summer. They're in the running for the high-priced free agents and always end up as a bridesmaid. In the case of Komisarek, yeah, I do think he's going to come at more than $4 million, and I won't be surprised if it goes over $5 million. I didn't even think he had a great year this year, but for his type of player, there's going to be a demand. You know, he's a big, strong defenseman who can play a lot of minutes. And I would be surprised if the Sharks went in that direction, trying to, you know, bid for Komisarek, only because I do think that the price is going to get a little prohibitive. And given that the Sharks have enough players in their own right that are sort of north of $5 million, it would be tough to bring in Komisarek unless they already had plans made, or I guess got it done before free agency happened, to clear out some of the salary.
The one free agent the Sharks have managed to land, although he does have a history on the West Coast, is Rob Blake. And there have been a couple rumors here and there about him signing a two-year deal, but then seemingly debunked. Do you happen to have heard anything about that deal, or do you think it's likely that Rob Blake will re-sign with San Jose?
I don't know anything specifically about the deal, but my immediate impression is that Blake would re-sign with San Jose. Maybe it's a matter of working out the actual details, and I don't know whether you give a two-year contract to a guy who's 39 years old, but most of the guys, once they reach that stage, are sort of seem to be willing to play the year-by-year game. But the way Blake played last year, he absolutely has to be considered as an asset if the Sharks are going to bring him back, because there aren't a lot of defensemen who are going to give you what he does. In fact, quite frankly, for 1 year, Rob Blake is going to give you more than Mike Komisarek is. Just because Komisarek may come and play some defense for you, but he's not going to do anything for you on the power play. And that, you know, that you can't diminish the importance of having a defenseman who can also play the power play. So if I'm the Sharks, I'm trying not to blow up this team that had 117 regular season points. I mean, I would try and bring Rob Blake back and sort of tweak what you have, but there would be no motivation in my mind to let Blake go elsewhere, really.
We're sort of a mind that, you know, even if Rob Blake does come back, we felt that the Sharks are really lacking a solid partner to play with Dan Boyle, that Aerhoff and Vlasic maybe aren't ready to take on that responsibility and maybe will never be that type of player. So a name that I see floated around that maybe is available is Dion Phaneuf. I mean, is he really available, and who do I have to call to get a hold of the devil to sell my soul to get him?
Well, and I've heard that Phaneuf could be available. I don't know We probably won't find out that he is available until a trade actually happens. But, yeah, he came off this past season wasn't a very good season for him. And much as we talked about with Turco, you wouldn't trade Dion Phaneuf when things are going great. But when things have gone a little rough, it might make him available, I guess, for the right package. And so, I mean, if you're certainly not going to get him cheaply, and you're not going to throw spare parts at the Flames and get Dion Phaneuf. But if the Flames were thinking that they've already committed money to Ginla and Kiprusoff and sort of seem married to those guys, that maybe the future would get them away with taking a couple other players as a package rather than going forward with Phaneuf. Now, I don't think that's necessarily what will happen, but if you were the Sharks and you have plenty of movable pieces, it's probably worth making an offer to find out, because I agree, he would certainly add a dimension for the Sharks defense that is lacking.
Scott, we want to thank you for coming on the podcast. We got one more question for you, a little bit of an amateur GM situation. So I'm going to be Doug Wilson, and I'm going to ask you to be the GM of another hockey team, and I'm going to make you an offer, and you tell me yes or no, okay?
Okay,
yep. Okay, you're the GM of the Nashville Predators. I'm going to offer you Milan Mihalik for Ryan Suter.
I'll certainly think about it.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Yeah, all right.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, okay. As I said, there are movable pieces on the Sharks, and I think Mihalik is probably one of them. He hasn't reached his potential yet, but yeah, I think that's certainly a starting point.
Okay, pull your ears out, because now you're Daryl Sutter, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to offer you Patrick Marleau for Robin Regier.
No. One year of Patrick Marleau doesn't get you Regier.
Okay.
I know Regier is much in the same mold as Komisarek, the big, sturdy defenseman. But, yeah, I can't see the Flames giving him for 1 year of Marleau.
Okay. Now you're Brian Burke.
Oof.
Jonathan Chichu and Christian Ehrhoff for Caberle and a second-round pick.
I don't know what they think about giving up the second round pick.
Okay.
Only because the Leafs are already a little light on picks for their rebuilding needs. But I think if you're interested in Caprile, he is available.
I got one more for you.
Sure.
Okay. Washington Capitals. I'm offering Thomas Pleahall and a third round pick in 2012 for Ovechkin. No?
Well, you know what? They probably wanted to get his salary off the cap, so we might be able to do that.
Yeah, that is real burdensome. Scott Cullen, writer for TSN, thank you so much for joining us on Dudes on Hockey. We really appreciate your insight and your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, dude.
All right, thanks.
Dude, another good interview, dude.
I think so.
Congratulations.
He has a lot of insight, that guy. He knows a hell of a lot about hockey.
Absolutely. And he always writes some of my favorite kind of articles, which are speculative on roster moves. The most interesting part to me was the amateur GM situation that we put him in. Dude,
yeah.
I've been talking about Mihalik for Ryan Suter, and he seemed interested, dude.
Yeah, that was interesting. I didn't think he would go for that.
He seemed like maybe if I threw in like six-pack of Molson.
Yeah, Tim Hortons franchise.
He might have gone for it.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. Thank you to Scott Cullen for joining us. And, dude, this is my favorite time of year. We're getting into the draft and unrestricted free agency, and the Sharks have a lot of question marks. And looking at players that we kind of hit on quickly with, like, Samuelson, Kopecky. I don't know, Kopecky. I mean, he didn't even play in the last round or two.
None of these guys are going to be cornerstones.
No, but that's, we have our cornerstones.
Right.
We need our supporting cast.
Speaking of cornerstones that might be out, though, Nabby, Gustafson,
that's huge.
That's a little new here, so let's talk about that. I mean, now I think Cullen has opened my eyes a little bit to this fact, which is, signing this kid is going to be a huge risk, because you're essentially saying that Nabokov is going to be gone after this year. And that's a really risky move. Although he had really amazing, amazing stats in the Swedish Elite League, the fact is that this isn't the Swedish Elite League, and this guy's 24 years old, never drafted.
It seems like, you know, what you, the message is, what are you saying to Evgeny Nabokov by bringing in Gustafsson here? You sign him to a one-year, $900,000 deal because that's really all you can do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could get him to agree to longer term, but he's not going to do that. He probably wants a one-year deal right now at the, you know, at what he can make, which is the
$900,000. Yeah.
And he hopefully wants to play well and then cash in with a larger deal, you know, in the next year. So what's a better situation if you're Gustafsson, sort of leaving the Nabokov issue aside right now? Let's say the deal is with the Sharks or with Dallas, which is similar.
Mm-hmm.
Come to a good team like the Sharks. We're going to tell you, you're going to play 25 games to 30 games on a good team, a team that's in position to win a cup. And then, you know, we'll see what happens. If you're the better goalie, then we're going to play you. If you're not, then you're going to back up Nabokov. And then after that, we'll see. Or he could go to Colorado
and be the starter from day one.
And really be on a terrible team.
Yes, that is in huge trouble.
And Toronto, I mean, you know, that team is borderline terrible. Borderline.
Right.
They're still not going to be good next year.
No.
So he could, is that going to help him get a bigger deal by going, I could see him being in San Jose, dude.
I could. I just, like I said, I wonder about Nabby because, you know, I guess you give him a tryout. But then you get him or Greiss. I guess you have to make that decision. It gets a little bit trickier with Nabby because then you're saying maybe he's not the slam dunk number one. He's not going to play 70 games if he wants to next year, which I'm personally fine with.
So isn't this what we said Nabby needs?
I think so.
When Nabby played his best, he had Toskala pushing him every step of the way.
Yeah.
So you bring in this kid that, you know, maybe he's going to be the next Lundqvist, or maybe he's going to be,
yeah,
you know, a total failure.
The next Johan Hedberg.
He might be a total flop, but, you know, he's certainly going to be more instant competition than, you know, Tyson Sexsmith or even Thomas Greiss.
Or even Brian Boucher.
Yeah. You know, this is saying to Nabokov, your job is not totally solid here, and that might make him step up his game. I think Nabby's not in the plans beyond this year, personally, just because I don't think the Sharks are looking to spend $6 million, $7 million on goaltending after, you know, developing all this goaltending. But I think it's really interesting. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
I think it's something's got to give, I would imagine, before the draft, because it's going to affect whether teams are going to be drafting goaltending. It's going to affect what's going to happen on draft day with a lot of trades. So, you know, look for this to maybe play out in the next week, dude.
Yeah, or we'll be talking about this all year, because I think Colin has a good point. I mean, do you really want, if Nabby goes, that means you're essentially throwing in, as your number one guy on a really good team, a guy who's almost going to be completely unproven.
Right.
If it's Gustafsson, he'll be here for one season. If it's Greiss, it'll be one season at the most. So you're going to hand over the reins of a Stanley Cup contender to a guy that has less than 1 year of NHL experience. That seems very risky.
But see, I don't know if that's the situation. I think it's Nabokov and Gustafsson, if he's here, and them playing together, and whoever's playing better wins. Nabby doesn't have a choice. He's got to play out the year. And then if Nabokov is amazing at the end of the year, then the Sharks have a tough decision to make.
Right. But we're not the Blue Jackets. You don't just hand the reins over to, you know, the one guy, you know, the guy who plays 30 games and he's going to win the Calder.
So you let the guy play 25 games, and if he's not great, then yeah, you let him walk,
I guess.
You know, you're in a 1 year commitment here. I think it's you can't lose.
Yeah.
You can't lose in this situation. And Nabby being a little irritated and fighting for his job, I think is exactly what he needs to be doing.
All right, dude, let's get to the shootout. Got some new news. Looks like Jim Balsillie, or is it Balsillie? I think Drew Remender pronounces it Balsillie. looks like he's not gonna get his franchise in Lower Ontario after all. I don't get my own NHL franchise. I don't know. That whole franchise is in such trouble. I mean, even if they do find a buyer, it's still going to suck. They're still going to lose money every year. It doesn't make sense. Let them move it. I mean, this is what I said from the beginning, though. I have to say I got this right. I mean, I said that Gary Bettman would never let Jim Balsillie own a franchise, and it looks like I'm going to end up being right, with a little help from bankruptcy, from the U.S. bankruptcy court, I might add.
I don't hate that the Coyotes are not moving, because I think it would have been a real burden on the Sharks as far as travel. It's nice to have a team in Phoenix that's really only 2 hours away. Then if they move to Hamilton, then there's going to be some realigning of the divisions, which means, you know, it's likely that, well, who would we get? Vancouver? Yeah. Gee, thanks a lot.
Yeah, great,
you know,
draw.
Great,
yeah.
Great draw. So would you rather play Phoenix six times a year or Vancouver?
Yeah, that's no
there's
choice.
No way, like, that wouldn't have worked out well for the Sharks travel-wise or competitiveness. So I'm fine with it staying as is, but it's going to continue to be a real problem.
I think so. Next story, new GM of Dallas, another Pacific Division story. Joe Nieuwendyk made what I think are actually two bad moves in 1 week. One, he fired Dave Tippett, the head coach, and two, he hired Mark Crawford. Not good.
I guess, you know, you really want to put your stamp on it, but, you know.
Also, he didn't actually talk to any of the players about the move, either move, either. So, wow. That's bold by Joe Nieuwendyk. You know, is this going to be the
Helen Keller behind the wheel?
Is this going to be second coming of Brett Hull making bonehead personnel decisions?
I hope so, dude. I hope so. I think that, and we mentioned this in the interview, I think it's possible that he might try and make another major personnel move, and the guy who might be the one on the block is Turco.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a team that might be looking for goaltending, maybe Toronto might be interested in Marty Turco for, you know, a Caberle for Turco, and then a few other pieces in there. That wouldn't be shocking to me. I'm going to say, dude, I'm calling it right now.
Wow.
Nieuwendyk is going to trade Marty Turco.
Wow. By when? Beginning of the season?
Draft day. It's going to happen.
Wow. That's bold, dude.
Thank you, dude. I go big or go home.
Last story. Brent Sutter fired/quit from the New Jersey Devils. All reports he's going to pull the Niedermeyer move and go work with his brother.
I want to work with my brother. Maybe the Niedermeyers will go to Calgary and it'll be like a family festival. They could have picnics and skip in the park.
It'll be like the Brady Bunch, like the Bobbsey twins or something. Who knows?
Whatever.
Yeah, who cares?
If Sutter goes to be team Sutter in Calgary, then they'll just both get fired at the end of the year.
That's the thing. That's for sure. Because if that doesn't work out, then they're both gone. I mean, Daryl Sutter is hitching his wagon to his brothers, and they're both going to go up in flames if the thing doesn't work out.
Go up in flames,
dude. I didn't even mean to do that.
That was a good one. Way to go. Yes, pink eye just made you funnier.
Well, I guess I have one thing going for me. That's the end of Dudes on Hockey. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll be back again next week, same time, same place. You can check out our blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. Later, dude.
Next week, Mike will have a colostomy bag.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.